Check out my newly renamed podcast, Democracy on Fire with Kay Brown, where we'll discuss the ongoing conflict with Iran and its implications for our economy, security, and upcoming elections. Hope to see you there. Democracy on Fire on United America Network.
Welcome to Hotspots on the United America Network. From the shifting landscapes of politics and culture to the urgent challenges facing our planet and our communities, this is where the conversations that matter most come alive. With her experience as a journalist, legislator, and activist, Kay Brown brings sharp insight, uplifting perspective, and unflinching courage to the issues shaping our future. Get ready for candid conversations, bold ideas, and the pushback our times demand. Now, here's Kay.
Hello, and welcome to Hotspots. I'm so glad you're here. I'm in Reykjavik, Iceland, for the Arctic Circle Assembly, which is a large international gathering of government officials, scientists, indigenous representatives, environmental groups, and industry from around the Arctic and around the world. So I'm taking this opportunity to visit with some of the world's leading experts on issues that affect the Arctic, which affects the global climate. The Arctic is melting, and we'll be examining the ramifications of that in this podcast today. My guest is Dr. Sean Pryor. Dr. Pryor is a scientist and lead advisor to the Clean Arctic Alliance, a coalition of 24 nonprofit groups campaigning to protect the Arctic and address impacts from maritime shipping in the Arctic. Sean focuses on interpreting marine science to support conservation and management advocacy and building consensus around marine policy development. She's worked on ocean governance and ecosystem-based management in relation to shipping and offshore industries, marine protected areas, and fisheries management. Sean has more than 30 years of experience in this arena, and she now works to influence the International Maritime Organization, which is responsible for regulating international shipping. Welcome, Sean, and thanks so much for being with me.
Hello, Kay. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you.
Sean is one of my colleagues, and we work together on the Clean Arctic Alliance. As the Arctic is rapidly melting and the climate is warming in the Arctic much faster than the rest of the globe, why is that happening?
There's a number of reasons, but mainly because of emissions of greenhouse gases. But it's not just gases. Carbon dioxide is a big culprit. But other pollutants, super pollutants, are also being pumped into the atmosphere, and they have a huge effect on the Arctic. In particular, something called black carbon, which is basically soot. It comes out of the exhaust of cars, it comes out of the exhaust of all forms of transport. But with shipping, the exhausts, that they're using fuels that are even dirtier than are allowed in land-based transport. So the amount of soot coming out from ships is much higher. And unfortunately, it's a climate heater anyway, but then when it settles onto the snow and ice in the Arctic, it speeds up the melting. And in doing so, not only is it speeding up the melting of the snow and ice, it's exposing darker land and darker water underneath that then continues to absorb more and more heat. So you end up in this never-ending cycle of warming. And as a result, the reflective capability of the polar regions is being lost. This is called the albedo effect, and it is being reduced because of black carbon.
Does black carbon come only from ships, or are there other sources?
There's quite a lot of sources of black carbon. Shipping is a significant one in the Arctic, but it comes from flaring from oil and gas installations. It comes from all forms of transport. It comes from diesel generators, all forms of energy production that uses oil-based fuels. But from shipping in the Arctic, because it's operating far north, it has a greater chance of landing on the snow and ice. And also, as a result of the efforts of the Arctic Council over the last decade, most sectors have been reducing their emissions of black carbon, but that's not the case with shipping. In the last decade, shipping emissions of black carbon have more than doubled.
So I know the Clean Arctic Alliance is working to get the International Maritime Organization to act on this problem to reduce black carbon in the Arctic. How is that effort going, and what do you anticipate is going to be happening in the next few months?
The International Maritime Organization, or IMO, has been looking at this issue for well over a decade now. The impact of black carbon on the Arctic was recognized around 15 years ago, and shipping was one of the many sectors that needed to take action to reduce its emissions. In terms of terrestrial sources, that can generally be done by the domestic governments. But because shipping is an international sector, it needs to be addressed through international regulation, and that's why it falls to the IMO. The IMO spent a number of years now, as I say, over a decade, talking about black carbon, trying to decide how to define it, how to measure it, and then what you need to do. It's taken a long time to make progress, but finally we're hoping that some progress can be made in the coming months. We need an Arctic state, or preferably Arctic states, to submit a proposal to the IMO of the regulation that they would like to see put in place that would start reducing emissions. And the easiest way in which this can be done, the easiest and the quickest way in which this can be done, is by asking ships, or requiring ships, to move from heavy, dirty residual fuels, or residual blends now, to cleaner distillate fuels.
So when the IMO acts, they are an agency of the United Nations, and things are done by consensus or by treaty. So the countries that are part of this conversation get together, and hopefully next spring will agree to amend the treaty that governs operations in the Arctic. And then it'll be up to all the individual countries to sign on. What about Russia? Is it a participant at all in this process, or do we think that the Russians would be bound by such an agreement?
Russia is a real challenge at the moment. They are a member of the IMO, and they are party to the international convention that regulates emissions from ships, including the annex that's responsible for air pollution. And this is an issue that we don't really know how that will play out at the moment. We need Arctic countries to bring forward a proposal, because this is an Arctic-based problem. However, it's not just Arctic ships that are sailing in the Arctic. Ships can be sailing in the Arctic but flagged by the Bahamas or Liberia or Panama. And this is why we need action at the IMO. And the IMO is the best place to take this action, because it regulates all of international shipping. And at the moment, Russia is a part of that body. It's a part of the discussions that go on. But obviously, it is possible that they could try and block the discussions. But the IMO works by consensus, but it doesn't have to have consensus. And there are ways in which it can adopt new regulations without complete consensus. It would clearly need to have a majority of countries committing to taking this action. But there are ways in which regulation can be adopted and a single country decide to opt out if it wants to. Obviously, we hope that won't be the case.
How does what happens in the Arctic affect the global climate?
Obviously, what happens in the Arctic in terms of climate change and climate warming or heating is important for those living and operating in the Arctic. But the Arctic acts, and the Antarctic too, the polar regions act as effectively the refrigerators of the planet. What happens in the Arctic is important and has consequences for populations in the Arctic and activities in the Arctic. But the polar regions act as the refrigerators of the planet. And so what happens, what changes in the Arctic and the warming that we're seeing in the Arctic has implications for the planet as a whole. The melting of sea ice is causing the polar regions to heat more rapidly. But it's the melting of the glaciers in the Arctic that is causing sea level to rise. And obviously, sea level rising doesn't just happen in the Arctic, it happens everywhere. But also, it's not just about sea level rise, it's about changing weather patterns. And with the changing weather patterns as a consequence of climate change, we're seeing those weather patterns changing throughout the whole of the Northern Hemisphere.
At this conference, the Arctic Circle, Assembly, we've heard scientists from various parts of the world talking about how close we're coming to tipping points, and looking at the 1.5 degrees Celsius goal that was set by the Paris Accords to keep global warming under that threshold seems to be slipping out of reach. What's your take on where we are in relation to meeting this international standard of achieving a 1.5 degrees Celsius, limiting warming to that amount?
Well, the changes that we're seeing happening globally at the moment are really quite scary.
Yeah.
My personal view is that we've probably reached 1.5. It's not been officially declared as yet because we need to have reached it for a number of years. But we've been at or around 1.5 now for a couple of years. So I think we might be there. I think all we can do now is do everything within our reach to try and keep temperatures as low as possible. And we know that with every even half a degree or even a tenth of a degree, the impact on the planet is bigger and bigger. The advantage of taking action in relation to, or not the advantage, the urgency of taking action in relation to super pollutants like black carbon and like methane, another super pollutant, is that they give us the best opportunity of trying to stay at 1.5 or below. Action on carbon dioxide is also fundamentally important, but it will be much longer before we see the consequences of that action. Action on black carbon the consequences of taking action on black carbon will be very quick. Black carbon has a very short lifespan. It stays in the atmosphere for only a matter of days, maybe weeks at most. So if you stop pumping black carbon into the atmosphere, you will start seeing the effects of that within a matter of weeks to months.
Given that the IMO has had this topic under debate for many years, why has no action been taken already, recognizing the severity of the crisis and the effect that black carbon is having on the Arctic and the speeding up the melting? What are the factors at play that are blocking action?
I think there's a number of factors at play. One is the need to try and get as much consensus as possible. But in fact, one of the things that has really slowed down is a lack of consensus around what type of measure will make a difference. And there are a number of ways in which black carbon can be reduced. One of the simplest, as I say, is to move to cleaner fuels. The cleaner the fuel, the less black carbon that's produced. Ultimately, we need to move off fossil fuels altogether, and then we will see, hopefully, zero emissions of black carbon. But there are other ways in which black carbon can be reduced as well, and we've seen it on land already. So we've seen changes in the fuels used on land. And then the use of technology to further reduce emissions. So things like diesel particulate filters, which are on most cars nowadays, certainly in the developed world. And this diesel particulate filters can really significantly reduce your black carbon emissions. So moving to cleaner fuels has to be the first step. That can reduce your emissions. It depends on the type of engine, but probably between 50 to 80%. If you install a diesel particulate filter, you can get reduced emissions of over 90%, probably nearly 95% or more. And then ultimately we need to move to clean fuels.
What can citizens do to affect or influence this process?
I think as individuals, we need to consider our demands that we make in terms of our lifestyles on the environment generally. Almost all of the products in our homes, the things that we're buying, the stuff that we buy, is being shipped around the world. And if we make less demands, then we will see less shipping. But I think we just have to be conscious that everything we do requires energy. And the more energy efficient we can become, the more energy efficient we can become, the less emissions we will be producing as individuals.
The warming of the climate is such a serious problem that unfortunately has mostly been ignored by the legacy media and the business press. What we see now is a slow-rolling attempt by fossil fuel corporations and petrostates to deny the impact of their actions while producing and selling as much oil and gas as possible, all the while making enormous profits. Yet, there are some signs of hope. There are many positive things happening around the world in the clean energy transition, particularly in Europe and other countries that are moving forward with aggressive changes to implement renewable energy sources and stop using fossil fuels, which are the heart of the problem. International maritime shipping is one of the industries responsible for the climate crisis. It can influence what's happening by reforming its operations to burn cleaner fuels and use technologies that maximize efficiency and incorporate wind power to displace fuel use. With these actions, they can make a contribution to slowing down the meltdown that is so ominously affecting our entire climate. Because the industry has not done these things voluntarily to date, it's time for the International Maritime Organization to mandate that they do. And thanks to my guest, Dr. Sean Pryor, for chatting with me today. And I hope you'll join us again next week for Hotspots. Climate change is just one of the crises facing global society today. And it's going to take a movement to ensure that our leaders respond to the urgency of this situation. At the United American Network, we're working to build a movement for a clean and healthy future, and we invite you to join us. Thanks for being here. This is what democracy sounds and looks like.
You've been listening to Hotspots with Kay Brown, where tough issues meet thoughtful conversation. Stay engaged, stay inspired, and join us again as we spotlight the struggles, solutions, and stories that fuel resilience and change. Until next time, keep your fire burning. Hotspots is a production of the United America Network and is available on most major podcast platforms, as well as from unitedamericanetwork.com. This is what democracy sounds and looks like.
If you've had enough and want to wake up our recalcitrant Congress, join me on Democracy on Fire with Kay Brown for the top 23 reasons we need regime change now. Hope to see you there, Democracy on Fire, on United America Network.